Okay, we're up to Sif Chav Zayin. I'd like to just share with you before we get going again. Every time we spoke about this, people asked about using DNA evidence all the time. I mentioned to you that in the 50s there was a tumult about using a blood typing. Blood typing was first discovered in the early 1900s, and blood typing cannot be used to determine who's a father, but it can be used to determine who's not a father. In other words, if you're the same blood type as the child, you may or may not be. But if the child has a different blood type than the mother and the alleged father, obviously it's a different father. So there's a tumult in the Beis Din in Eretz Yisrael about using blood typing or not. Rav Herzog at the time was very strong that he wrote very sharply that how could you ignore the fact that blood typing is scientifically proven, and if all the everyone agrees that it's a proof, that it should be used as a proof. And there were others, interestingly enough, including Tzitz Eliezer, who's usually on the other side of these things, who said not to rely on blood typing. It's fascinating. One of the things they tainted was that the Gemara says there's shlosha shutfim ba'adam. The father gives the white, the mother gives the red, and HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives the neshama. So it says the mother gives the red. The blood comes from the mother. So how could you use blood to determine the father? That was one of the times. Now what's fascinating is the Sefer Aguda, 400 years earlier, when they have the Shaila, the Gemara says that Mesu Echa Machmas Mila, that if the brothers died because they have a blood disease and the blood doesn't clot, so the two sons died Machmas Mila, so you don't do a bris on the third child. Because Mesu Echa Machmas Mila, it's hemophilia, it's a lack of proper blood clotting, which makes it a sakana. At that time, the Sefer Aguda wrote in the Shulchan Aruch Paskins, it's only brothers from the same mother. Brothers from the same father, it doesn't apply. Because since blood comes from the mother's side, dam comes from the mother's side, so it's only the mother's side that you inherit blood, and the father's side not. And it doesn't prove hemophilia. Right. Now, the fact is that it's true that hemophilia is a disease which is only passed from the maternal side and not from the paternal side. So it says in Shulchan Aruch, and it is that way. It's that way until today. Now, when it comes to blood typing, though, it does not seem to be an accurate. Although if somebody wants to make a case for it, blood typing doesn't exist in the red blood cells, only the white blood cells. The only cells that have a nucleus have blood type, and red blood cells don't have. So if somebody wanted to make a case that the red comes from the mother and blood typing, you can make the argument. But anyway, be that as it may, at that time, Rabbi Avadia, who must have been a young man, he couldn't have been more than 30 years old, in 1954. When was Rabbi Avadia born? Probably was not more than 30 years old. So his tshuva on the topic is included in the whole collection of tshuvas. And he writes that anything scientific that's new, you never know with time it will be disproven. So to rely on the paskana halacha, on a scientific thing that's relatively new, he didn't want to rely on it. And he voted not to go with blood typing as a proof. And whatever happened. This was, I think, Rav Herzog pushed through, and they paskin based on blood typing that the man was not the father, and Shalom Yisrael. Now, what? Not Shalom Yisrael. Okay. I mean, you go. Okay. I don't know if the child was a mamzer in that case. The child. There, they were arguing over child support. I think.
Did they use it to prove a child being a mamzer?
That wasn't the case. It's a good question. Now move. That's in 1954. Now move 50 or 60 years later to DNA testing. Now, DNA testing is for sure, right? DNA is proves conclusively. So the Paiskim today basically say that DNA is reliable to determine, but they say not to run. If we say Rav Bila Sachar Abal, you don't go running to do DNA testing all the time, but you do DNA testing. So Dr. Babbage upstairs came to me very excited about a year or two ago with the foolproofness of DNA testing, and he brought me a newspaper article. It's just fascinating how what Rabbi Avadia wrote in 1954, the new things that are foolproof, you can't know how foolproof they are until science is given some time. So I'm going to try to read. This is a news article. He gave me a couple of copies of them. This is just one of the shorter ones. But it's a fascinating story. It says the following. This is a true story. It's if you Google Lydia Fairchild, so she's in all the medical journals, everything. The story is this. Lydia Fairchild, not a Jewish woman as far as I know, was 26 years old, unemployed, and applying for public assistance in Washington State. Everyone in her family had to have DNA tested to prove they were all related. This is our door. You know, if somebody's raising children, they have to have DNA testing to prove that it's really their child. The Department of Social Services called Fairchild, told her to come in immediately. What she thought was a routine meeting turned out into an interrogation. The DNA test results challenged everything she knew about her family. Yes, her boyfriend was the father of the children, but she was not the mother. All the children were not the mother. Fairchild was certain this mistake was made, but the social worker said to her, no, DNA is 100% foolproof, and it doesn't lie. Fairchild was not only denied government assistance for young children, she's now suspected of acting as a paid surrogate mother and committing welfare fraud. She was in danger of having her children taken away for good. Fairchild began to panic. She knew they were her kids. But if she's a surrogate mother, she'd be carrying somebody else's egg. Right? She rushed home to search for photos of her pregnancy and found her children's birth certificates. She told her parents, who couldn't believe the results. Fairchild called her obstetrician, Dr. Leonard Dreisbach. He sounds Jewish, right? I told him she certainly had these three kids, and they were hers. I don't know what's wrong with the DNA testing, but I know she had the kids. But none of it seemed to matter, because DNA testing was considered infallible, the gold standard in court. DNA showed that Fairchild's genetic makeup did not match that of her children. To eliminate any chance of human error, new DNA tests were ordered from different labs. The results were the same. The children were not hers. Fairchild knew she was close to losing her children. After three court hearings, the judge looked at her and told her to get herself a lawyer. She writes that none of the attorneys wanted to take her case. And now, on top of that, she was pregnant at the time. So the court... When she gave birth to another child, the court officer stood in the delivery room to witness an immediate DNA test of the baby. They took DNA from the baby and myself right then and there after birth. It came back, there's no way it's possible the baby is mine. Even though they witnessed the birth, they believed she was acting as a surrogate, possibly bearing a child for money. They explained, if she's bearing a child for money, why the person didn't take the child, but okay. But then she got a break. Across the country, there was another woman with DNA that didn't match her children's. In Boston, Corrine Kagan needed a kidney transplant. So they match up the children and the mother, who's an eligible donor. So Kagan recalled the doctor said to her, Mrs. Kagan, we have some unusual news to report to you. We never had this before, but your children do not match your DNA. Any child from her mom and dad should inherit genes from both the mother and the father. In Kagan's case, her two boys had not inherited any of her DNA. They weren't hers. It was a medical mystery. Then Kagan had an idea. She had a thyroid nodule removed a while back. Doctors found a sample of her thyroid tissue in a nearby lab. This piece of tissue was the key to solving the medical mystery. Her thyroid DNA matched her children's. Dr. Lin Ol made a groundbreaking discovery. Both Kagan and Fairchild were their own twins. While Fairchild and Kagan were in their respective wombs, two embryos fused together to form one single human. The woman had the blood DNA of one person and the DNA tissue of another person. In her blood, she was one person. In other tissues, she had evidence of being a fusion of two people. It's a real condition, a rare condition, called, and again, I'm not sure how to pronounce it, chimerism. Chimera is a Greek, in Greek mythology, is a creature made up of different creatures. In other words, some are meant to be a twin, but while in the womb, two fertilized eggs fuse, becoming one fetus that carries two distinct genetic codes, two separate strands of DNA. Now, this is how an androgynous is created. An androgynous is created, Rabbi Litzlan, when in the womb there are twins, a male and a female, and they fuse together to form one baby. And sadly, if one is male and one is female, the baby has a mixed genetic code of male and female. If they're both male or both female, then the child is born that way. So anyway, the end of it was, I asked the judge, she goes back now to Fairchild's attorney, was determined to solve the mystery. She came across Kagan's story in the New England Journal of Medicine. I asked the judge to postpone the case until the test could be done. After they were done, there was proof that Fairchild was her own twin as well. The judge finally believed she was the biological mother and dismissed the case. I probably wouldn't have had kids today. They didn't discover our situation. They wouldn't have known to even consider me as a chimera. If not for Kagan, Fairchild would have lost her family forever. So why am I reading this? It's obviously a rare case, and the evidence is still considered basically reliable. But what Rabbi Avadia wrote in 1954, that new scientific discoveries need time to be flushed out, to figure out if they're absolute, it seemed to have come true, at least in this DNA case. So I thank Dr. Babbage for this, and one of many, many things that he's come up with over time. Okay, now we go back to Siman Daled. So DNA is not infallible. That's the moral of the story. Okay, we're up to Daled Chaf Zayin. Let me give a picture of where we are. We have two more Sundays. The main halacha l'maisa of the second half of Siman Daled is the din of a shtuki and an asufi. Again, a shtuki is a child whose mother is known and his father is not known. Shtuki, the mother quiets her when she asks, where's daddy? She says, be quiet. That's called a shtuki. The din of a shtuki and of an asufi. Asufi is a child that's abandoned, where neither the mother nor the father is known. We know from the Gemara that Chazal were geyser on shtuki and asufi. However, both of them have extraordinary kulas. Now, we so far have only dealt with shtuki, which started back on Sivcha Vav, and we dealt with the din of a shtuki. We said, "Oh, you're kind of a shtuki beduki," which means that the mother has a nemanis to say the status of the child. Now, I want you to understand there are two types of shtukis. There's the unwed mother who's pregnant. So ruba de ruba is that the child is kosher. Because how could the child be possible? It's an unwed mother. If it's a Jewish father, then the child is kosher. If it's a Gaiusha father, the child is kosher. It's only if she was nibbala to a mamzer that the child could be a apostle. So the case of shtuki, a wimmakel, a kernel shtuki beduki, that you can trust the mother, is because of this overwhelming majority that the child is kosher. A sufi starts in Sif Lamed Aleph. Now, we're going to learn now Sif Chav Zayin, Chav Ches, Chav Tes and Lamed, which deal with a married woman who has a child that is a shtuki. Now, how does that happen? So we have two situations. Today, it would be a married woman. Now, a married woman, Roy Bila Sachar Abal, you assume that the husband is the father. And we're going to deal with that. It's going to say that in Sifchav Tes and Lamed, which we're going to get to fairly quickly. Now, obviously, in our time, it's a bigger problem because you have women who had a kedushin, deraisa, and didn't have a get, and they're separated. There's no roi bila sachar abal. So suddenly we have a new case of shtuki, which is a bigger problem. You understand, a married woman who has a child not from her husband, now that creates an issue, because just the opposite. Rife says that the child is a mamzer, because in Eishas Ish, what's the only hope for the child?
A guy.
So, I'm saying when they had, you're right. I'm saying, I mean, when they had a religious ceremony at that time in a marriage. I wish it was rare. I wish so. I wish it was rare. It's unfortunately when they come to get married, you know, it depends. You know, it depends. So. But at any rate, Sif Chav Zayin Chav Ches is not negar today. We're going to learn it anyway. You remember in the time of Chazal, they did kedushin and nisuin separately. Today we do kedushin under the chuppah. We don't have any arusa walking around. And arusa is a woman with kedushin and without nisuin. Now here, she has like the worst of both worlds. She's married. She's an Eishes Ish. Normally in Eishes Ish, they write bila sachar abal. You assume the child is from the husband. But here, she's still living in her father's house. It's the most famous Gemara that doesn't exist. You know that? Kalo b'loy bracha asur l'bayla is not a Gemara. It's a Tosfos Ksubis, brings it from one of the Midrashim. And a collection of Brises. But someone's going to Google it in a minute, but I think that's what Tosfos says. What? Kovim Yisrael is Kala. Okay, but it's not Gemara. So Kala b'loy bracha asur l'bayla kanida. So Lamaisa, they're awesome. But Kala b'loy bracha means without Sheva brachas, which means it's a language in the Sufachopa. So here you sort of have the worst of both worlds. Now, as I said, this is not negea to us because we don't have we don't really have this metzias at all, and Mimela, so we'll learn Lamana Shlava Seinu. We'll learn Sif Chazayin and Chav Ches, which deal with the arusa. But like I said, it's not the klolim are always cross negea, but not so much. Let's learn Sif Chazayin. Arusa shenisabro hi beveis avia. You have an arusa. She neshes ish. She had kedushin. But she had no chuppah. And she's still at her father's house. So what do we say? Shtuki is a beduki, right? So what do? We ask her. Im hi oimeres shemia oris nisabra. If she says she's pregnant from her chosin. Im hu maida. Or eine befeneinu. Or he just doesn't contradict her. Havlad kosher. We assume that the Vlad comes from her Arus. Vava b'noi liyarshai, even for Yerusha. Filo ma'arus ayme she'enei zaycher, rak she'enei machisha. They asked Arus, were you by Yerusha? He says, I don't remember. So, as always, is that machish? So it goes into rule of shtuki beduki. However, if he says, I'm not the father, then Havlad Mamzer Vadai. She has no nemanis. Then Eina Bifadeinu Lishala. I said, she's not here. I shemeres any adas mimihu. She basically refuses to answer. Have a suffix Mamzer. So here we have a case of a shtuki that's in bad shape. The shtuki is a beduki if the mother is believed. But when the mother doesn't know, the shtuki is aser. Even when the mother says, but the husband is makhish, you're not believed. Yet, ha'isha eina b'cheska zayna. It's hard to understand. The child's a mamzer, but the woman doesn't have a din zayna. The man is la'im la'aris debalti. Afilu makhisha. She's allowed to marry a kayin. Hani milila alma. Even though she was an arusa, she became pregnant. Obviously, she got a get. The husband denies it's from him. So it would have to be, you're right. I'm sorry. It's a technicality. It has to be he died, I guess. So the vlad is kosher. Avala oris gufa asura. The shavina shechetifini sura. Meaning to say that to the oris, she can't go marry the oris. Once the oris denies that he's the father, even though we don't believe him to passel her, she has a cheskes kashrus. But there's a rule of shavia nafshech etichin isura. We've spoken, I think, in the past about shavia nafshech etichin isura, which is basically a person is neman on himself for isurim, even in a case with two edim amachish. A person legabe himself is believed legabe isurim. That's called shavia nafshech etichin isura. Someone walks into Beis Din and says that the woman says, not even a Beis Din, she says to her husband, I'm a nida, and later she says that it wasn't true, unless she has an amasla, so she's aser. But the case of the Mishnah, a woman says, Pliny gave me kedushin, and the man says, no such thing, I never gave a kedushin, so she's not believed, she's becheses penuya. Lagabi herself, Shavi Nashid Isura, she's also. Lagabi her husband, the husband doesn't have to give her a get, doesn't he? What?
See,
the
Bishul
says, why? So after talk about Yakir, I want to talk about it. I'm going to wait till Sivchav Tesk, where it's in the game. We're never chayshish in this Abra Bambatya because it's so rare. The odds of Nisabra Mambatya are very small, and we're never chayshim Nisabra Mambatya. The big kasha here is we should be chayshim, she was nibbala lagoy. That's like the thing that's hanging over all four sifim. Why shouldn't we be chayshim Nisabra to a guy? Make it at least a suffik mamzer instead of a vade mamzer. Let's say she wasn't nibbala to this man, but it could be she's nibbala lagoy. Which won't help her, obviously, the Gabi Akayin, because she'd be a Zaina, but it would help the child. So we're going to get that to that in Beishmul Nun Beis. We have to work our way through the four Sifim, and then get to the question of why we're not Chayshish for Nibbala Lagai, and then we'll be able to deal with it.
So,
what?
Would
Nibbala Lagai Lahalocha not? The Rabbeinu Tamshit in Taisus is develops Zir Masus and Zir Masam. Really, the pasuk is Zeramtam, Susam Zeramtam. But I think for Allah it doesn't help because it's Ma'ala by Ma'al. Okay. Anyway, this is where we're holding with an Arusa. And again, Arusa is not common. It's not common. It's unheard of today. Nobody's in Arusa, and therefore we move on to Sifchav Ches. So here it says, if she has a bad reputation, if she has a reputation that she's a flirter, not only that she flirts, but she's insa in Arusa, v'yemanasha macherim, afa pisha ba aleha aris bebeis chama. Havlat Safik Mamzer. There's no Roy Bila Sakhra Baal when she's not living in his house. So Ava Bishaba Leha Oris Beis Chama Havlat Safik Mamzer Shem Shefkida Efkira Atzvala Oris Kafir Kira Atzvala Acherim Vim Nivdaka V'Amra Loris Nebalti Havlat Kosher. But if she was questioned and she says Loris Nebalti and he doesn't contradict her, then she's believed. The chen yedua shor is baal le'avolayotze koshes and some echerim. Of course, that would be the case, because why should I say she's mizana with others? If she plans to marry this man, we would assume she's mizana only with this man. So chavzayim chaches are cases of arus, which, as I said, are gavri not negaya to us, and therefore we'll move on. I do have to tell you that the beishmul mechaltes b'chaykat explain. Hanemon is here that we give her a cheskes kashrus. The fact that she's believed to say la'oris, even though she's not supposed to be nibbala to oris either, but it comes from the cheskes kashrus of the woman, because it says even liyurusha, the child is believed. That's a chiddush, right? You have here a woman who has a child, and we say, had you have a child, you're an oris. It says from this man. The man doesn't contradict her. So she's believed. She's not only believed, but she's even believed the child Yarshin. From this father. From this father. The other brothers could say, Ein Halkab Lamamnach Arai, but they could say, so it doesn't matter. It's a B'dali Yarsha. So both Chakas Mochim Kachav Ches and Beishmuel Memdali explain that we give our Cheskas Kashrus that she was Nibbala La'aris, and we don't want to pask in a stira. Even though it's a little bit kasha in other places, we don't want to be sorry. So she's believed the child's ours and his, and not a mamzer. And then we're going to say by mom and not, so we stick with it. Okay, that's the pashtus. Yeah. It's a good question, and it's a very big shaila lahalacha, because I mentioned to you that they are bali tshuva, and then who are shtukis, and then the mother is not from. The question is she has any demonis at all? So the pashto should be she doesn't have nemanis, which creates it. It should be she doesn't. A fry Jew doesn't have nemanis, which creates obviously. It would seem that she's a mumeres, that she's not believed. So what do we do in such a case? We have to come on to the other heterim of shtuki for all these. Bali Tshuva. We're going to get to Piskei Tshuva Mem Aleph, and we're going to talk about what we do for them, because we have a problem that when the mother remains fry, there's really no nemanis to such a woman, and it creates an issue in the shtuki. Chazal goes on a shtuki. It's a chomedik gzeira, because when it's an unwed mother, it's like a chance one in a million. She was a nibbala to a mamzer. Because our guy's on a shtuki. So we'll have to come to it. Let's go b'seder. We're going to now learn chavtes and lamid, which are very nageya. This is the din of an eshes ish who has a child that's a shtuki. Now, the rule is, the mechaber says, eshes ish emeres ala ober she'enei mibala, eina nemenes l'paisai. A woman can't say about a child that it's not from her husband, because we assume, even if she was mezana with someone else, still, even if we have eidim, she was mezana. It says in Beishmuel Nun, even if they are afilim zinsa bevadai, even if she's with vadai mezana, she's also to her husband, but we say roi bila sachar abal, and we assume the pregnancy came from the husband, not from the maisiznus. What?
Unless we know he wasn't
there at the time. But V'yeshayimrim dafka b'nesua she'esh l'cheskes kashrus. Aval arusa she'emeres habanosh imamzer. But if here the mother is saying against the child, child's imamzer. Abisha orasayim ishuhu shaloi. Bishloi zaza yada imitech yada. Yeshayimrim ben avasafik mamzer. V'yeshayimrim duhu neman. Now we're going to have to talk about the nemenis of a father. But here it gets confusing. You have an eisha sish says, my child's imamzer, she's not believed. In Arus, some say he is believed. There's no Rebila Sachar Abal. Aval. So this is a din of a married woman. She says, we say Rebila Sachar Abal. Now, the question is about the father. There's a pasuk in, where is it, Kiseitze? Spinaya Bachar Yaker lost his life Pishnayim. I think it'd be in the Kiseitze. Am I right? Yeah. That Ben Abachar Yaker lost like Pishnayim. A father, Yakir, Chazal understood he has a nemanis to recognize who's his child. Now, the Gemara is in Perek Yesh Noichlim. The Rishayim argue, you'll see in a minute, across the board, what nemanis a father has on his child. There are those who understand that a father is an absolute nemanis to say, this is my child or this is not my child. Yakir means he could take his second child and say, this is my Bechor, which means the first child is a mamzer, according to that. Right? If we know the child was born when they were married, and we know the mother gave birth to the child, and the second child is his Bechor, then the first child is a mamzer. And the Torah gives a father such a nemanis. Let's see how it plays out in Shulchan Aruch. A father says about a child, or a pregnancy, that's not from him. Or he has a child. Shehu she'ina b'nai. Neman l'paislai. B'umam zavadai. It's exeris akasa that he's neman. V'im yesh banim l'ben. Eidei neman. Fascinating. He could say his son is a mamzer, but not his grandson. If the grandson was born before he said his Haggadah, he's not Naaman. Then it knocks off his whole Naamanus. V'mihiyai meres makuti oimei eved nisabarti havlat kosh shein abal yachal achisha b'zeh. And this line is the most important line in the halacha l'maisadika world. The father could say, it's not my child. But he can't say, who is the father? How does he know who the father is? She was on with someone else. So this is the total discussion today about trying to help a shtuki type 2, a shtuki with a husband, with a woman's in Eshes Ish.
No problem, the husband says it is no.
What?
You don't want the case, the husband says, I don't know.
Right.
He said, well, he says, I know it's not my child. But his lashon is, ain't about yochel achishem zeh. The bar is no way of being machish. So how do you do that?
It's better off saying that it's a
God from a guy. It's better off saying a guy than saying from a husband. That's what comes out. Now, the question here is, like, fast forward to our generation. The question is, what do we do? We have, generally, a shtuki is a baduki, and usually the mother has a nemanis, or there are other nemanis that we're going to talk about. Here, the mother's an Eshes Ish, it's bad news. Now, usually we say Rabbi Yisachar Abal. Here we have a case where either the father denies it, or in our situation, with, assuming they had a Jewish marriage, and never had a get, and they're separated. They live in two different cities, in two different countries. It's not possible the husband was bail her. And now she has a child years later, right? Up to 12 months, we say it's from the husband. But after 12 months, we don't say it's from the husband. So what do you do now with the... what do you do now with the child? The child comes in front of us, it's about tshuva, and this whole story comes out. The question is, our only way to be mashi this child is to find a way to say that we can assume that the bia was from a guy. Now, the Shulchan Aruch says, im hi oimeres. Gemara seems to say pretty clearly, we don't assume it's from a guy. Im hi oimeres makuti ameved nisabarati avlad kasha. If she says it's from a guy, she's believed. Now look in Beis Shmuel Nun Beis. Okay, we'll talk about that. Nun Beis, v'hu mam zevadei keikos avator, shmama desfiralei imloy omrohi mekuti desabarti. This is a big chumra. If she didn't say it's from a guy, loy amrina anan shema mekuti desabarti. We don't even say shema mekuti desabarti. We're not chayshish for a guy. Of a Rambam kasa, do becheskas mamzer, hainu safik mamzer. Yeshlam eshema makuti nesabayati kamash kasi besama, can't cause of a magid. That's what the Magid Mishnah says. So the Torah says, we're not chayshish for a guy unless she says so. The Magid Mishnah says, the Kavanas of Rambam, we are chayshish. Hine menes loimer makuti ho'ober, vavlai kasha, mishum belay dibura havlat safik mamzer. B'shema makuti havlad he nemenes. Now you have to follow the lumdis. He's saying the Torah says it's a vade mamzer. She says nothing. We're not chayshish for guy. Rambam says it's always a suffik. Maybe it's a guy. Magid Mishnah says since the Rambam said it's always a suffik, that's why she's believed. So says the Beis Shmuel. Therefore, l'shitas hator, disfir lei vlad mamzer, kashalay mehi nemenes lahachshu. It's hard to say that she has an emunah to be machshir. In other words, the Beis Shmuel here is telling us that even though it says in the Mechaber, which is the Rambam, that she's nemenes to say mukuti desabarti, but according to the Aruch HaShulchan, according to the Torah, there is no nemenes to say, and therefore it creates a problem He's basically saying that Samachakis Rishayim if she has any type of demonis. Now, you're going to have witnesses where she was a whole 9 months, so what are you going to do?
She lived in Africa somewhere.
Yeah, it'll be very helpful. Yeah.
It depends on the call of person.
The thing is this. The first Nakuda is when she says that the Beishmol is making a lomdis in the Torah doesn't hold you believed. This is a tumult. The Aruch HaShulchan says that the suffix in the Shitas HaTorah doesn't take away from the Vade in Shitas HaRambam, and that she is Nemenis. If this Chetshuva, Lamed Vav, Lamed Zayin, Lamed Tes, brings a handful of cases, what's very striking is how the Gedali HaPoiskim, I'm talking to Rabbi Yehuda, Rabbi Kiveger, some Sefer, went, even though we're very Machbar and Yuchsin, they found Kulis for most of the Tshuvas that we have in front of us. They have a lot of Kulis to say that to be Mekel on the child. And they all say that when the mother says Nukuti the Sabarati, that you're believed, which is the Shulchan Aruch, and they're not concerned with the Beishmuel, which is only, like I say, Hatzalah Purta. It helps in cases where the mother is a religious woman. I mean, obviously she's not that religious. She gave birth to someone and she was Mazan with a guy. But if she's otherwise a religious woman who has a Balas Taiva, so she has a Nemanis.
The father has an Aruch.
So it seems to be inconsistent, you mean, with the Shulchan Aruch. Okay, I hear the point. It's a good point.
Does the father have Neimanis if he's not prosper?
I don't know. Let me tell you two steps. So I want to just tell you for the Lamdis and then for the Lamaisa. In the rule of Yakir, Yakir is a confusing topic. We say a father has a Neimanis. Rabbi Kiveger, which is brought here in Pesachei Tshuva Lamed Zayin, it's a longer Rabbi Kiveger. Even the Pesachei Tshuva is abridged version is long, and it's a rather famous Tshuva of Rabbi Kiveger for two reasons, the two parts of what he says. He basically throws into the garbage this whole nemanis of Yakir of the father, halacha lamaisa, because he's mitzaref two possibilities. He says first of all, even if the father's believed that it's not his child, it could be it's a guy, the child's kosher. That's A. B, he says the dinim of Yakir are themselves a subject of dispute. He brings, if you look into Pesachei Tshuva Lamed Zayin, a few lines in, there's Aleph Beis Gimel. He brings three shitas of Rishayim in Yakir that make it not applicable to our case. Aleph Das HaBahag, that Yakir is only when he's coming to say this about Yerusha. If he's not saying about Yerusha, he's just saying it's not my child, he's not a manis. Beis, the Shita Satisis Rin, that you never to say in a bni only when she doesn't contradict. Gimel, Dar Zarua, Sefer HaMachria, that Nemar Rakbay Meshu Benoi, now when he says Eina Benoi. In other words, they hold, the Torah doesn't say you can say if one is not your child. The Torah can say the second child is my Bachar, mainly the first child is my answer. But just down to say about a child that's not your child, you're not Nema. Now I want to just give you the picture of what's going on here. What Rabbi Kiveger is doing is finding three Das Yachids in the Rishayim. Sometimes you learn a Gemara, see, you have the Rishayim brought in Shulchan Aruch, and then you have Rabbi Peretz and Taisus Rid, you have other Rishayim that for one reason or another, the Shulchan Aruch didn't deal with too much. Can you make a tzirif out of three Shitas HaRishayim that you discover somewhere? So I want to share with you the rule of Psak, which I heard from Diane Weiss from the Michas Yitzchak. I once, in 1980, Sukkot of 1980, I was in Eretz Yisrael. And I asked Diane Weiss if I could sit by him when he's answering Shilas. So with Sukkot, he said, tomorrow in the Sukkah, he's going to be in the Sukkah from, I think, 9 to 12 in the morning. I'm welcome to sit there and listen. So I was there for 3 hours. And not a single shaila was like worth writing down. I had my pen and piece of paper. They were all basically simple questions that that were not, you know, they, look, those are the shaila. People ask a shaila, they have a shaila. So, you know, I cooked fleishiks in a milch, ain't it been yom yapat, what's it in? So, you know, like, I wanted to write it down. But I had some downtime when nobody was coming to ask. So I had some downtime, so I was able to speak to him, which was very a rare opportunity. It was just me and him, and he wasn't in a rush to go anyway. He was sitting, it was before cell phones, right? So he was just sitting waiting for people to come in. What? I probably spoke Yiddish to him, I don't know. He came from England, yeah, but I doubt I spoke English to him. I spoke either Yiddish or Ivrit. Probably my Yiddish, is, at least then, was certainly better than my Ivrit. I asked him about being mitzarif snifim shitas. I asked him about a china plate that became osir with a davar gush. I said, can I be mitzarif? There's a shita you could kash a cheres with three hagalas. We don't pass them like that. But there's such a shita. And then there's a shita that overnight is eina bin yayma. You don't need 24 hours. The shita doesn't hold a davar gush. So maybe a davar gush. Like a bunch of shitas. So he told me a clown. You can only make tzirufim of shitas to be mekel if one is a solid shita. If one is a solid shita, well, obviously if you pass them like that, you wouldn't need tzirufim, but one is at least a mainstream shita. To take four or five shitas that are not accepted, you know, you can kashu cheres three times, but nobody passes that way. To take three or even five side shitas, you can't do. That was his clown. You have to have one ikar shita and then take other shitas with it. That was the clown. So you have to know, you have to, for that, there's no formula, you have to have a certain sense in halacha about what you're dealing with. So this bothered me, this Rabbi Kivega. Rabbi Kivega takes three shitas in Yakir. There's a Bahad Shita, a Sefer Machria, and a Tosis Rid. What's he doing? He's taking three shitas and we don't pass one. The answer is no. Rabbi Kivega is adding this to the Iker Shita. That is, that when there's a Suffolk guy, it's a Suffolk mamzer. The Torah says mamzer vad, they've always said mamzer Suffolk. Really, if Chazal would not have made a gezeira on a shtuki, there'd be a tzad to be mekel because Suffolk guy, even just a Suffolk. Rabbi Kivega just wants to turn it into a double Suffolk by adding these three shitas in Yakir. So in such a case, and that's I think why Rabbi Kivega is coming. To, with these three shitas, and it's a Suffolk mamzer in the first place, he's coming to be mekel. That's the story here with Rabbi Kivega. Now, so that's for the lumdis of the sugya. What about the lamaisa? The big question is why we taka are not toilet a guy to say that it was a guy, especially if you have a Suffolk, it might have been her as well. Whoever's on the phone, please mute yourself. Okay. I think we're going to have to mute him. I think he's just opening a bag of potato chips. So. At any rate, the point is that the question is why we're not tiling a guy at all. So Rabbi Yashiv brings a Tshuvas Chassam Sefer. Now Rabbi Yashiv, I think, is in the first volume of his Kavitz Tshuvas. I think it's Tshuva Kuf Mem Aleph. And it's really a very important Tshuva. And he says, he brings on some Sefer, that there's a rule, Isha Baidekas Mizana. A woman, she looks at who she's Mizana with. And he says, to Mizana with a guy, his Lashon is Cherpa Lanu. That it's a bezayin for a Jewish woman to mezana with a guy, and therefore we're not toiling a guy because it's a bezayin for a Jewish sister to mezana with anybody. But it wasn't guy didn't want Jews didn't want guy. That's what some sefer writes. So Rabbi Yashiv writes that in our generation, when all the boundaries are broken, there's no cherpa yeah guy nish guy yeah nish yet. So he's mitzadeid lahalacha that you could be toiling in a guy. And there's no cherpa hilanu, and you could be telling it a guy. And certainly, what it says in the Shulchan Aruch, he aymeres, the guy in the Sabbath, she should be believed, even though Rabbi Shmuel brings chayokim. But certainly in such a case, there should be a nemanis. That is a big kula, which is like fresh off the press. It, you know, 100 years ago, we assumed it wasn't that way. And today, where there's no Jew, non-Jew boundaries, Rahman al-Islam, but that itself is a kula.
Would it be different than the Shol and Chutzoritz?
Yeah. In a place where it's right, Yisrael, I mean, this whole thing wouldn't apply. There's Nagan Chutzoritz.
You go by Yerub, you go by Medina. Like,
so we're going to learn later that you go by ear, and the question is, I mentioned whether a college campus is its own ear, or there are at least some tshuvas that seem to say that it is its own. Now, the issue, the issue is Safi Kavua. Maybe she went to him, and Kavua Kemetza Amech, there's always a Safik. So on that, it could be Bizman Azeh, there's also a Tzad Kula of the same thing, because of the terrible state of our generation. A kavu has to be nikr b'makaymai, and there's no assumption that if you go into a college campus and you see a man that his kavu b'makaymai is nikr b'makaymai, that he knows if he's a Jew or not a Jew. Certainly, the others know if he's a Jew or not a Jew. So the kula of ainah nikr b'makaymai not being kavua, these two factors play into a tzad gadol to be mekel with a shtuki b'zman hazeh, and. And Lamaisa, with one exception, Lamaisa, there's a tzad gadol to be makel. Every case, I guess, somebody capable has to paskin. But just sitting here in the lumdis of the sugya, it turns out like this. We know shtuki and asufi are terrible. Chazal made exer. Turns out shtuki have a pnuya. So we makel that shtuki beduki. We makel on beduki, and we're going to have a second kula in a minute. And by Eishas Ish, which certainly should be a problem, now it turns out that if she says it's a guy, certainly it's good. But even if she has no other money, she's a friar person, it would seem that with Chassam Sefer, what Yashiv was saying, that with Chassam Sefer and the idea that now there's no Kavua B'Mekaymai, that those two kulas together would seem to be grounds, even to be makel by Ashtuki, except... The one exception is the following. The terrible, sad case where a woman got married with a Jewish kedushin. She did not have a get. She married someone else, a civil marriage. That, we don't have any way. That's our mamzer issue today. We have no kulis to be mekel on. Because today, when Fry Yidden are married, a Fry woman and man, both Jewish, are married... We still say right bila sachar abal. People are happily married. We still assume, even in today's society, that right bila sachar abal. So that's really the tragic case of mamzerim beinenu, is where the mother remarried without a get, had children, and now we have no etzah for her. We assume that this is the father, and no one's denying it's the father, and she never get from the first husband. So here we have the only way out. Is either to find a way to passel the first kedushin, if it be possible, or to find a way to say that this man is not really Jewish. You know, you can see other possibility. Try to find some type of proof that he's not Jewish. Which there's at least one person in Eretz Yisrael, a cowboy type of person, who for pay, he tries a lot of money, he hunts down people and tries to trace whether they're Jewish or not. It's I don't know what his success rate is, but he's like maybe had a past history in the Mossad. I once observed him in practice, and you know, he goes. There was a case of a mamzer, and he went to the man's. The man was a Jewish man who married this woman, and it was a problem. The first husband, and the second husband was definitely Jewish. The first husband, he went to trace down. The husband's mother was still alive, a Holocaust survivor in a European city. And he went down, and he went in like he's a newspaper reporter interviewing her about the war and, you know, like the whole nine yards. He taped her. Unfortunately, it didn't pan out because she is Jewish. It didn't work out. But he's a fellow who puts in a lot of kayak, and I'm sure sometimes it works out. So this is the long and short of Shtuki. Let's finish what it says in Shulchan Aruch, and then we'll try to move to Asufi. We're up to the Ramah, the second Ramah in Sif Chav Tes.
In our
A hotel is only a college campus. People there for extended periods. No one could prove that you became pregnant in the hotel. And, you know, the hotel is a place people stay for a week.
No,
but nowadays it's not. Okay, depends. I guess the Mitzvahs. The last Rama in Sifchav Tes Hadav Neman Al Benoy. We have a din of Yakir. Hainu Dafka Shloi Hayolei Cheskes Kashus Al Pi Av. If he didn't originally have a cheskes kashus, aval havel cheskes kashus al pi aav, shuva aav ein neman alav rak besadi. Once the father said, "It's my son," the adam get aliyas ben him. He's not later neman to say it's not his son. Ha'ava amar al b'shamar al b'nei shul mamzer v'chaza akach nasan amasal ledvarav. If he said his son's a mamzer, later he said, "I was angry at the mother." He gave an excuse. Loma diber b'tchila kach. He's also neman. Hadav Neman Abenoi, Hainu B'mishu B'cheskas Aviv, Kaikai B'ishtai Nesua. When is a father Neman? When he's B'cheskas the father, like he's married to the mother. Abnuya Shemer Ezeu Ben Pliny, Vahu Aimesh Mamamza Nisabra, Ede Neman Lepaisla, Ede Neman Esalav Lachshirai. So these are all exceptions to the rule of Yakir. Yakir is only if he's B'cheskas' father, and he's never said that it's my son. And he doesn't give an amasla and change his mind, then he's believed. So that's the case of a married woman with a child. It turns out to be from a different man. Siflamid, Haimar Latzmi Shul Mamzer. Someone says about himself he's a mamzer. Nema Lesser Atzmai Bibas Yisrael. He's Nema to answer himself in a Jewish woman. And, but not lekula. Achiva devade shul mamzer ubnei kamayu. If the children are born before he says it, then he's not nemal legabe others, only about himself. The big chiddush here, because really in this case, a man doesn't know. He says about himself he's a mamzer. How does he know that he's a mamzer? But still, if he says about himself he's a mamzer, so shavi anashi chidi sura, and he's stuck. Okay, let's move on to Lamed Aleph, to Asufi.
Okay.
Well, we question him. He says, "I'm a mamzer because," and he doesn't know halacha. He's saying, "I'm a mamzer because my mother was married when she had me," and he's not a mamzer. See, you have to, obviously, he's talking where we question. Okay, we're going to move on to Asufi. The takeaway of Shtuki, which we learned, well, this Sunday we didn't learn, but the two Sundays before, is really that the Paiskim bend over backwards to be Mekel. When they're taken together as a group, the cases, which was that I mentioned a number of cases, and you take them together, we had one case where a woman gave birth 12 months after her husband left town, up to 12 months. And we say, it's a 12-month pregnancy, we're machshir. What are the odds it's a 12-month pregnancy? And even if she had a period in between, how do we know she had a period? She went to the mikveh. They used to have records and went to the mikveh. Still, we're machshir. Even though nowadays women have a selekas damim. So there are such cases. We had one case, which I think in the very beginning of the siman, the Berkei Yosef, the Sifya Dalet, where you had a woman who gave birth, if I remember the case, her husband left town. And she gave birth shortly thereafter on the Aseres Yemei Tshuva. And then she gave birth again Shabbos HaGavul. Now people ask you, was it Ibiya that year? So I don't know if it was Ibiya. But how much after Aseres Yemei Tshuva to Shabbos HaGavul? 5 or 6 months. So the Paiskim with Taila that it's a 7-month pregnancy. It's one pregnancy. And one child was born 7 months and one was born 12 months. What are the odds? So again, Dr. Babbage brought me some articles, which I also have copies of, I didn't bring them here, but about the women who gave birth, I think the longest was 97 days apart. Gave birth to a child, and 97 days later, gave birth to another child, which you would think is impossible. What? So that's 3 months and a few days. So I don't remember exactly what the limit of how many months apart it could be. It could be that Aseres Yemei Tshuva Shabbos HaGavul Takaseh is too long, but certainly 3 months, Chizkiya v'Yehuda Achi. So they sort of bend over backwards to be machshir children. We know Safik Mazim HaTeres L'Kula, which helps, but it's fascinating that the place can go with such a mahalach to bend over backwards to be machshir, to avoid mamzeres. I mentioned that this Rabbi Akiva Eiger has a second chiddush. It's an agav chiddush. This long Rabbi Akiva Eiger, he does have a second chiddush in the rules of Nishtana HaTeva. In the rules of Nishtana HaTeva, L'chumra, we definitely say Nishtana HaTeva. There's no question. Things where nature changed L'chumra, we're machmir. In things where Nishtana HaTeva L'kula, the question is how far we're mekel. Today, women who become pregnant don't have a regular period. It was certainly that way a couple hundred years ago. So Rabbi Akiva Eiger talks about it, that everyone tells him that when a woman becomes pregnant, she doesn't have a period. In the time of the Gemara, until Hukar Ubra, until 2 to 3 months, women did get their period after they became pregnant. And Rabbi Akiva Eiger says, in the case of this woman who gave birth, her husband left, she had a period, later she gave birth, they said, look, we don't have to be smarter than the Gemara. The Gemara says that until she's Hukar Ubra, she's not Mesulek as Damim. So the Kula, he's saying that we're going to say Loi Nishtan HaTeva, and we're going to be Mekel on the child, the Dabar Pella. So Ramesha has Tshuvas about it. Ramesha Shita is when it's clearly Nishtan HaTeva, we say it even Lakula. It's Negeya in one of his letters. The halachi is that a woman who becomes pregnant has to be Chayshish for her vest. According to Shulchan Aruch, until Hukar Ubra, that means, let's say she saw the 20th of the month, so she has to be chayshish now two times or three times, whatever it is, until Hukar Ubra. She has to be chayshish. So Ramesh says, "Bizman is you don't have to." Dem Selek is dumb. So once she takes a pregnancy test, even the first month, she takes a pregnancy test, she knows she's pregnant. She doesn't have to do bedikah. She doesn't have to be perish from her husband on the yom avest because she knows she's pregnant. That's what he says. Whether you rely on a home test, a blood test, he doesn't get into it. But he says if you take a test, you know you're pregnant, finished. You don't have to be chayshish. So it's he has a letter this to Rabbi Eider. There's a second letter in the later Chalik, where Rabbi Eider printed a sefer on Hilchas Nida. So Rabbi Moshe writes to him, I hold, you can say a lakula. I'm arguing Rabbi Akiva Eiger. Rabbi Akiva Eiger doesn't say it. So you can't write in your sefer what I said as if it's straight halacha. Rabbi Akiva Eiger says differently. So he writes to him in the letter to write, like Yeshemer v'Yeshemer. That he writes to say. But he considers this Rabbi Akiva Eiger here in the tshuva about a Meselech is dumb giving birth. About a woman who had a period, them being pregnant, that the pregnancy could preexist. Rabbi Akiva Eiger is saying she became pregnant. In this case, she became pregnant. She had a period, even though she became pregnant. The science of it, there is something called breakthrough bleeding. There is some women, when women become pregnant, the egg and the sperm meet and are not yet attached to the uterus. They meet usually somewhere as the egg is floating down the fallopian tube, sometimes in the tubes, sometimes in the uterus. And sometimes you have a tubular pregnancy because it becomes pregnant there. If it attaches itself to the fallopian tubes, then it causes issues. But it attaches itself later. The pregnant egg, when it attaches itself to the uterus, it sometimes causes bleeding. If it attaches itself right at a major vein or artery, whatever it is in the uterus, it can cause bleeding, and that's called breakthrough bleeding, which sometimes happens in the first month. It's not a regular period though. It's a light bleeding, and so there is such a mitzvah. If that's what happened in the time of Chazal, I have no way of knowing. What?
She has to separate
them. Yeah, she hasn't done either. Yeah. It's a regular uterine bleeding.
Yeah.
In the time of Chazal, there was such a Metzias, which certainly didn't exist in the time of the Tshuvas Acharonim. No, nobody assumes a second pregnancy on top of the first. I should say nobody in the last few hundred years. At least in the time of the Gemara, there is such a thing. Gemara doesn't say it's Shriach either. Gemara says you have to be Pirish. What? Right. Shemakasa Ubrasambo, right? The first 2 months. Okay, we'll learn the dinam of a Sufi. All right, the time is really up. Basically, a Sufi chazal v'chayshish. What's an a Sufi? An abandoned child. Now, I have to tell you that there's an exception, just like Shtuki, there's an exception. If you ask her, she says the child is kosher, the child is kosher. A Sufi, 99% of the time, seems to be fine. Because the halacha of an Asufi, of an abandoned child, is only if the child is abandoned in a trash bin or thrown into the forest. If the child is abandoned in a way that shows the mother cared about the child, like I give an example, it was left at the Rav's step, or it says it was left in the shul, it was left in a place, or even the child was gemalit, a tiny baby, and the mother cared enough to malit the child, or even to smear him with ointment. So then we make we assume an Asufi is kosher. Now, so that Shtuki and Asufi, for the most part, are lakula. The Shaila about Asufi will again be whether you have to be cheshish for a guy. That's going to be, an Asufi, we're not cheshish for mamzeris, except where the baby was thrown away to die. In most of the cases, today, what are the cases of Asufi today? They're cases of a child given up for adoption. You don't know if it's Jewish or not, if the child's Jewish. So, okay, Mitzvah Hashem, I guess the next 2 weeks we'll learn the deen of us.